You're listening to the Fresh Hell Podcast. Fresh Hell contains stories of a disturbing and often graphic nature and is intended for a mature audience. Please don't let your kids listen to this, or they might turn out like us.
I'm Adrian.
And I'm Bree.
We are the hosts of the podcast Crime Fairies.
It is a super, super fun podcast all about true crime. Now, I know it sounds weird to say we're fun and about true crime, but if your brains work like ours, learning about true crime is always fun.
Definitely. But we take the main cold cases. So most of these are ones that you've never even heard before or they're done. Also educate you guys and see if you guys can help crack some of these cases. Come join the fun at Crime Fairies.
Hi, I'm Annie from the US.
And I'm Johanna from Austria, and you are listening to Fresh Hell, your favorite international podcast. And what you just heard in the beginning was the promo for Crime Theories. They mostly cover unsolved cases, which is right up my alley, as you all know. And they recently covered the Robert Durst case, which is one of the cases I personally am obsessed with. So many rabbit holes to go down.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have the courage to cover it, though. Do you, Annie?
No, I don't.
We really don't want us to get sued by the Durst family. And same goes for the Foxcatcher case, by the way. That's also...
Yeah, I think we try to live our lives in a way that won't get us sued. I feel like that's a real hope for the best. And what was the other thing? Hope for the best. And keep
your cool.
Keep your cool. Hope for the best and keep your cool and don't get sued. It's going to be a very long t-shirt by the time we're done with it.
Head on over to Crime Theories and give the girls a listen, please.
Definitely. If you are a first-time listener, then welcome. We're very glad you found us. We are friends who met online, like, 3 years ago now?
Yeah.
I can't remember. Time has lost all meaning to me.
2018.
Yeah. And we've never met in real life. We have never met in real life. We've never been in the same room together, which, it's wild to me. But we will. One day. And thanks to everybody who sends us the really nice notes when they're listening back through our like late 2019 backlog and we're talking about all our 2020
this
plans.
This is going to be the greatest year of our lives. It's going to be so awesome.
We're finally
going to
meet. We're going to do so much traveling. It's going to be amazing. Yeah, not so much. Anyhow, if you're a regular listener, then welcome back. We missed you. And thank you all for your support, as always. And we want to give a special shout out to our newest Patreon members. Ooh, we have a murder, a mystery, and a macabre this week. So thank you very much to Stephanie Erdman. Thank you. To Ariana Jose. Thank you very much. And to Sarah Storm. That is a very cool name. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much. And if you out there want to hear more about all the ways you can support us, including Patreon, but not only, please listen until the end because that's when we'll tell you all about that.
Yes, that's right. There's one more thing that I would like to address very quickly, or I feel I need to address it before we get into today's case. Someone wrote a very upset review about part one of our episodes on the Chowchilla bus kidnapping, because while discussing the history of a man who helped save the life of 26 kids, I casually mentioned to Johanna my desire to normalize men who enjoy the company of children. And in this case, I was talking about a male bus driver. But of course, you know, there's teachers, childcare workers, uncles, grandpas, dads, all kinds of male-presenting folk who happen to genuinely like kids. I know several stay-at-home dads, which was so rare when we were kids, wasn't it? And I think it's awesome. And I didn't imply any nefarious purpose in saying that because there wasn't one. And sometimes there isn't one. I never said that anyone should ever normalize strangers of any gender showing a sudden inappropriate interest in your kids, nor would I. That is something you don't want to normalize. It's so important to know what's happening in your kid's life. But is it weird if dad takes all the kids to the movies? No. Is it weird that a single man would choose to teach or coach kids? Also no. Almost everyone is capable of loving, nurturing, and caring for children, so I think it's important we stop pretending that it's the joy and burden of women and only women. And let's also not forget that women can be abusers too. You know what I mean? We talk a lot about the double standard that women face, but now we're sort of talking about the flip side, because why is it totally fine for a girl's goal in life to be a mommy? I mean, I know women, grown women, whose only goal in life was to be a mother. And that's great. That's fine. Nobody bats an eye. But why is it so silly or frowned upon if a boy wants to be a daddy, to play house, to want to be a dad more than anything, right? They're equally important and valid feelings. And I just think that childcare should be a partnership. So to the person who wrote in a review that I'm asking our audience to normalize sexual predators and need to correct what I said, I'm really sorry, sincerely, that you spent so much time writing a really angry review about something you incorrectly inferred. You said in your review you didn't even listen to the episode because of my applauding a man who cares for children in the first 15 minutes. But you know, sex abuse or molestation of children of any kind was not a part of last week's story at all. And so I'm sincerely sorry that that's where your mind immediately went. And unfortunately, I get why it would, but there's just nothing to correct. I meant what I said, and I think it's sad that there's no way to say it that wouldn't have some people getting upset about it. You know what I mean? I think that clearly this needs to change. We talk enough about child predators. I think we're talking about one today. And I think it's also fair to show that there are plenty of men out there who are keeping kids safe and loved, and not everyone is a predator. Be careful. Always be careful. But not everyone is a predator. That's all.
I absolutely agree. And I would like to add one thing. If in the future or in any of the past episodes you hear something and you're not quite sure how we meant it, I mean, it's fine. You can write us a review. But the thing is, it would be so much easier for us to communicate if you just send us a message. Because sometimes it's just a little misunderstanding, or, you know, we maybe didn't express ourselves the way we wanted it to come across, something like that. Send us a message is always great. We always want to communicate with you about these things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, Johanna and I understand each other in a way that, of course, not everybody would understand. I would hope you would give us the benefit of the doubt, but yeah. Okay, what do you have for us today?
As you said, it might be a case about a predator, because today I want to tell you about a very mysterious and very sad case that took place in France in 1922 in the region of Brittany, so La Bretagne. Quick content warning, guys. The case involves the death, and probably violent death, of a very young child, so if this is a sensitive topic for you, you might want to skip this one. As to my sources, my biggest and bestest of source for this was the book Der Mensch ist böse by Julian Hannes. And as always, I will list all of my sources for this episode in the according album in our Facebook group.
Sounds good.
The little town we are traveling to is called Sœur-Rivoal. It's a very rural little village, and I think the closest more known city would be Brest, which lies 50 kilometers or 32 miles west of Sœur-Rivoal. The census shows that in 1926 only 579 people were living there, but this is a village that didn't grow since then. On the contrary, because each time the population was counted, we can see a steady decline in numbers. And so it goes down from almost 600 inhabitants to 164 in 1999.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, though, in 2008, the number started to rise again to 171. So that's a plus of 4.3%. And in 2018, we are already at 201 inhabitants. But you can imagine, it's this very rural, tiny village in Brittany, right?
It sounds nice.
Looking at photos of the area, it looks absolutely lovely. If you're looking for a rather isolated place to live, it's, you know, lush green vegetation. It's located in the national park, Parc Naturel Régional d'Armorique. Pardon my French, it's been years. It has these stone houses. I mean, all in all, Brittany or La Bretagne looks absolutely lovely, especially the coastal region is breathtaking. I have never been there. It's definitely on my list. Have you been there, Annie? I know you've been to Normandy.
Yeah, I really haven't. I've only done one day trip to Paris through the tunnel from London. And I'm so glad we climbed Notre Dame, and that was kind of it. And then, yeah, we did a week in Normandy. But that's it. And I would love to go back to France. I really enjoyed, especially the countryside. I mean, yeah. Paris is a beautiful city and there's more I want to do there. But I always prefer to get out into the villages and smaller cities.
So, Sarival is located in the Finisterre area of Brittany, which is the westernmost part of continental France. So it's no wonder that the region is called Finisterre, because that's how the Romans called it. Finisterre, the end of the world. I think that's pretty...
That's cool.
A pretty cool name.
Yeah, I think so.
Isn't there another end of the world in Spain?
I feel like there is.
After you finish the pilgrimage to Santiago de Compostela, I think.
I don't know southern Spain as well as I do northern Spain, so although it might be in northern Spain and I still have no idea.
So in a part of Sarriwal called Guaaludu lived a farmer, a man named François Picard, with his family. You all might want to get your next-gen jokes out of your system now, because now is the time for it. Later is not anymore.
Yeah, I don't really have any. I think Paul would, but my Star Trek, it's either really old Leonard Nimoy and Shatner, where you can like kind of see the strings, or it's the new movies with Chris Pine. I think those have been really fun. Paul keeps making me watch Wrath of Khan. It's fine. But I've got nothing next gen related. I love Patrick Stewart, but I got nothing.
So, François Picard, he lives with his wife and his 9 children in Guaaludu. The farmhouse lies isolated. You can't see any neighboring houses from the farmhouse. But I don't think that is, you know, I don't think this place felt threatening or creepy, not like Hinterkaifeck.
No, this sounds perfect. Yeah. You know, Hinterkaifeck is one of those things where would it be scary if we didn't know how many people got the axe in that house? Like, there was a serious axing there, but if they hadn't been...
I mean, people already said before that it's kind of has kind of a creepy feel to it, you know, because of the place where it's located.
Those
far
woods,
away
those
from town
woods.
And the witch's woods, how they called it.
Mm. Yes, the Hexenholtz.
Hexenholtz, something like that.
Yeah, I think that's what you called it. I don't know why that's the only thing I remember from that episode, but here we are. Okay, so we're back in a less creepy area, though. It sounds
less
lovely to
creepy
me.
Area. As far as I know, the Picard children love to roam the area, playing together outside as much as possible. Of course, the older children already had their chores on the farm. They had to lend a hand to their parents when needed. So very often, the youngest ones would have to keep themselves busy until the older siblings could play with them again. And out of the 9 children, the second youngest child was a daughter with the name Pauline, who was born in 1920. And Pauline loved to spend time with her brothers and sisters, you know, playing hide and seek, running around in the fields and woods that surrounded the family farm. And as I said, whenever the other children were busy, she knew how to occupy herself. I think the youngest one was still too young to be running around with the other children. Must have been less than a year old when this all takes place, so they probably kept their mother company.
Sure.
Which left Pauline unsupervised for some time during the days. But honestly, nobody thought anything of that. It was normal that the grown-ups and older children worked and the younger ones tried to stay out of the way. Different times. And nobody thought of accidents that could happen. Also, I guess the children were taught from a very early age where to go, where not to go, how to behave in the woods, not to eat anything that they didn't know, and so on. And when it comes to children falling victims to crimes, that was unheard of in that rural community. Nobody thought about stranger danger. Nobody thought about children being taken and possibly murdered.
No, of course they wouldn't. And honestly, that doesn't sound that different from the way we were raised, right? I mean, it's not like this was so different so long ago. It was pretty much the norm until fairly recently. You hear a lot about how it's a scarier world now than it was when we were kids. I'm not sure that it is. I think you just hear about everything immediately.
Yeah.
I think that's, yeah, it exactly. Seems like you are. It is, but yeah. But at that time, perfectly normal.
So it was the 6th of April, 1922. Pauline, as I said, was 2 years old. In the morning, she had followed her older sister, who had to look after the horses that were kept on the pasture in the hills. And then Pauline had to play by herself while the others were either, I don't know, probably attending school or helping on the farm. Pauline was playing in the yard, not even 100 meters from the farmhouse. 100 meters, that's like 109 yards, mm-hmm. So roughly the length of a football field or 1.5 soccer fields.
Yeah, that's actually about the distance from the back of my house to the back end of my backyard, where it sort of drops into a ravine. It's about the same length as an American football field. Not as wide, not as big. We have a little bit over an acre. I'm only mentioning this because it's going to help people in the US immediately imagine the size of this space. You know what I mean? But you could have kids out there and be keeping eyes and ears on them. I mean, that's where Opus always Absolutely. Wants to be, at the very back, because then it turns into woods again. Yeah.
Absolutely. Pauline could not only be seen from the house, but more so heard, because she was laughing and joyfully screeching. She was completely immersed in her play. But after a while, the family realized that something was missing. It had grown quiet. No more giggling and laughing from Pauline. She could not be heard anymore. And when they went to see what was going on with the toddler, they had to realize that she was missing. They were not panicked immediately. The older children were sent to look for her because, you know, maybe she had gone back to look at the horses, or maybe she just wandered off into the woods nearby.
Oh, sure.
But Pauline could not be found.
Oh, dear.
Another family grows worried. They need to find Pauline as quickly as possible because it's April and the days are still short and the nights can still be rather cool. And a two-year-old alone in the woods overnight is definitely not something you want. No. I think no matter what time of the year it is, though.
No, that's right. Absolutely.
So they inform everybody in the village, and between 150 and 200 people, it depends on the sources you read, they start to look for Pauline. And they are thorough. They are looking everywhere. They are leaving no stone unturned. And here comes, it depends on which translation, because I studied French for 5 years in school, but my French is pretty rusty.
That's like my Spanish.
I had to rely on the translation, so it depends on which translation you read. So apparently a priest said either they were searching so thoroughly that they even found things that had gone missing, like wallets, in the forest. Or he said they were looking so thoroughly that they would have found even a wallet that was missing.
I see. So either way, it was a very thorough search. They were like no stone unturned kind of situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's how thorough they were looking for the missing toddler.
And you have to, because kids, especially that young, if they're trying to hide, there are a lot of places to hide, you know.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. You really have to look. They're little. They can get into small spaces.
So they really did search thoroughly.
Yeah.
But no sign of Pauline. So where could she have gone? And then, of course, what always happens, people start to speculate. So what they were thinking at first was that she was taken by a wild animal because there were boars in the area. That's something I always worry about, encountering a boar when I'm walking in the woods with Gem and Leela, because we have them in the area.
Yeah.
I think that's the number one animal local to me that I don't want to encounter out there, especially in spring, you know, when they're having babies.
Oh, yeah.
I can see why people would be worried about Pauline having encountered boars. Such a tiny toddler would stand no chance.
Yeah, absolutely not. Something I found out that was interesting, only because we have Opus, who is a Great Dane, and I learned that they're actually a cross. Great Danes are apparently a cross between an English Mastiff and an Irish Wolfhound, but they're called German Mastiffs. And the only reason they're called Great Danes is they changed the term they used after the war because of anti-German sentiment. So that's why they're called Danes, even though they're not Danish in any way. But they were boar hunters originally. And then people started using them as guard dogs in their German castles. And then they went from guard dogs, I think, like outside the bedchamber to guard dogs inside the bedchamber. And now they have no guard or attack traits really left in them at all. And they sleep in your bed. But that was sort of the evolution of the Great Dane.
That's so interesting, because I always wondered why you call them Danes in English, because in German they are Deutsche Doggen, German.
Here, I think the scariest thing I would encounter would be a bear, probably. We get coyotes a lot, pretty frequently. But a mama anything is frightening, really. I mean,
Definitely.
Even a bird's nest. Have you ever been dive-bombed by an angry bird mother? You don't want to mess around with it. Yeah. So other than thinking maybe she was hurt or killed by wild animals, was there anything else, any other leads or...
I mean, of course they thought that she might have fallen somewhere, but they probably would have found her by then. But then there was some other rumors going around. So first of all, there was a man named Christophe Caramont, who had worked for the Picard family recently. As far as I understand, he was a traveling salesman selling umbrellas. I imagine he probably had come by the Picard farm someday asking if they needed an umbrella, but they didn't need that, but always needed additional pair of hands on the farm, especially during spring, so Christophe had stayed for a while. I don't know for how long, and I don't know what exactly he did there, but he had worked with François Picard. And after Pauline had gone missing, rumors made the round saying that one morning, during breakfast, he had shown great interest in Pauline, and it was said that he kept cuddling her and that he had told her that one day he would come to take her with him and then he would find a lovely home for her.
Okay, so just a few quick questions. I'm just confused by it because this feels like a really bright red, like, do you hear the people sing sort of waving red flag, right, at the breakfast table, right? Is this serious? Is this something that really happened?
Yeah, see... Look, I can't say if it happened or not, but I don't think that this really happened this way, because something about this story just doesn't sit right with me. If this happened one morning during breakfast, the family would have been there. And probably just the family, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think they would just have let a stranger say something like, hey, I'm going to take you away and find you a new family, to your toddler.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe if it was some super cringy joking moment... where you're like, okay, I think he was kidding, but even then.
But also, if he was living with the family and working with the father, it's possible that it was just he's sitting with her, maybe he is actually just friendly with her and like a joking, you know, one of these days I'm going to take you away and find you a nice family, you know, like, and everybody has a laugh. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, it's possible.
It just seems like
possible.
It seems like if he was serious about that, he wouldn't have stayed on working and living with them, right?
I mean, sure, as a joke, I don't know. It's possible, but to me, it sounds like this game of telephone situation
yeah.
we often have. We know it from other cases. There's probably this tiny speck of truth. Maybe he was joking around. And of course, he's a worker on the farm. He would be a suspect, right?
Right.
And then the villagers hear about that or remember that man. And they start adding things here and there. And have you heard already? And did you hear he said that? Not even out of some malice, just because that's how most groups of human work.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Of course, the police arrest Christophe Caramon and they interrogate him, but he didn't do it. He has an alibi. It was not only airtight, it was water and airtight. He could name several witnesses who could testify on Caramon's whereabouts that day. And I think they even tried to time if it would have been possible for him to make it to the farm in time from when where he had been seen by the witnesses. But it was just, it was not possible.
No, he was definitely not the one who was responsible
exactly.
for her disappearance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if Caramon hadn't taken Pauline, what had happened to her? There were other suspects. Neighbors had reported that they had seen two strangers creeping around in close proximity to the Picard farm. And there was also talk of a chimney sweep who might have lured her away with candy. But nothing came of any of it. So she stayed gone, vanished, without a single clue or any trace of where she went. And the weeks passed and then, a little after a month after Pauline had gone missing, police officers visit the Picard farm. But these were not only the local police officers. With them were colleagues from far away, from Cherbourg to be exact. And all of you Titanic-obsessed people out there, of course, now were like, ah, Cherbourg, I know that. Yes, you do.
Yeah, it was Titanic's second stop, right? After it had departed Southampton. But before they went on to, is it pronounced Cove? I think it's Cove. It's in Ireland. This is one of those things where, you know how we joke sometimes about when you mispronounce a word because you've only read it, you've not heard it? It's C-O-B-H is the city. I think it's pronounced Cove, like a cove. I could be wrong.
I think so too.
They're going to let us know.
You're exactly right. That Cherbourg was the second stop of the Titanic. That was 10 years earlier. Exactly 10 years earlier, in April of 1912.
Yes.
Cherbourg was the largest artificial harbor in the world at the time. Did you know that?
I didn't, no.
And still the Titanic was too big to land at the docks, and so the passengers had to be brought from and to the liner on tender boats, which I also find very interesting.
That is interesting.
So Cherbourg is 400 kilometers or 248 miles northeast of Gua-a-Lu-Du. And if you're thinking, excuse me, Johanna, but 400 kilometers is not that far away, then you're right.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's 248 miles is not that far, for sure.
I mean, yeah, for us today, we have cars and we have fast trains and we have buses. But back then, going to Cherbourg was quite a trip for a grown-up. And more so for a toddler. Because guess what? The police officers came with news. And they also came with a photo. The photo of a toddler.
Oh, okay.
A while back. And I wish I would have found the exact amount of time. But I couldn't. But it was definitely after Pauline had gone missing. A little girl was found wandering the streets of Cherbourg. She was all alone and nobody knew who she was or where she lived. So the police was called and they picked her up and brought her to the station trying to figure out who she was and where her parents were. But the little girl, whose age was determined as roughly 2 years old, didn't say one single word. But she was not scared or shy. On the contrary, she laughed a lot and hugged the people in the police station. And for days the policeman tried to find the little girl's home, but to no avail. Because it looks as if she was not from Cherbourg. Nobody knew her or had ever seen her. So that little girl looked well fed, and her clothes were clean and in good conditions. Where did that child come from? And when the police had no luck finding the toddler's home in Cherbourg, they started to look outside of the city. And they started to look further and further away. And remember, it's 1922, there was no national register for missing people, no internet, not even phones were available in most places. So that must have taken a while to find the missing person report from Gua-a-Lu-Du.
Oh, yeah.
But finally they did. And some officers went all the way to the little village at the end of the world, and they did bring a photo. And when they told the family Picard about the child they had found, and then presented the picture, the parents were ecstatic. Because yes, yes, this looked just like the little Pauline, la petite Pauline.
Okay. All right. So, I've already got a bad feeling about all of this. Could they tell with absolute certainty that the child in the photo was Pauline?
No, of course not. The photo was apparently a little bit blurry. Anyway, the photo looked similar enough to give the parents hope. We have the photo, it was published in many newspapers all over, and I will post it in our Facebook group, In the According Album. If you're not in the group, just Google Pauline Picard disappearance and it will pop right up. It's the first thing you find in an image search. So the parents look at the photo, and of course Monsieur and Madame Picard immediately want to go to Cherbourg to take a look at the girl in person.
Oh, okay. And was it Pauline?
Well, they arrive in Cherbourg, they are brought to Pauline, and they take a good look at the girl. And then they start to cry, it's tears of joy, and they hug the little girl, because yes, this was Pauline, they would always recognize their beloved child. The eyes, the ears, there's just no way to not recognize her, it's clearly her.
Okay. But we wouldn't be here if this was a simple missing child. It wasn't like a toddler just decided to visit Cherbourg, and it took a long time because they have very small feet and a short stride, but then eventually she was found unharmed, right? Like, that's clear. That's not what happened here, is it? I mean, that would be an interesting... Yeah. I wish that was what we were here to talk about, but I think it's going to get a lot darker than that, right?
You're correct. Yeah, it gets darker. After a couple of hours, the Picards started to have doubts. Because was this really their child? The weirdest thing was that she wouldn't react when they talked to her in the typical Breton dialect, or rather language. I think Breton is very different from regular French. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
I think you're right. I think they're different languages.
So they tried to talk to her in Breton, but she stayed silent. She didn't say one single word. Although Pauline was already very verbal when she went missing.
Okay, so maybe some sort of trauma caused her to stop speaking. I mean, I don't know what these people are thinking. Yeah, okay, keep going, because I'm trying not to judge.
I mean, yeah, maybe that's what the police officers and the doctor said, that maybe they don't know what she's been through and what she experienced, and maybe that's why she doesn't speak. But it really seemed as if the child didn't understand one word of what the Picards tried to tell her. There was no reaction whatsoever. She didn't even seem to recognize her parents. She was friendly and laughed and hugged them, but just in the same way she had done with all the strangers at the police station before. And then all of her clothes and even the shoes completely different from what she was wearing when she had gone missing.
Okay, so on the pro-Pauline side, this is her, then all of this can be explained, right? Every bit of doubt would have a logical explanation.
Yes.
And her parents recognized her immediately.
That's true, and that was the general consensus, even though one big question still remained unanswered, and that was, how had Pauline made it to Cherbourg? Because I think it's safe to say that the toddler didn't just walk there.
No, they have a tiny stride. They're very unsteady. It's not a good, reliable way of transportation for toddlers. No, no, I shouldn't joke. But really, I mean, somebody must have brought her there. If that was Pauline, then somebody would have brought her there. And then things start again. It gets very dark. And because who and why? Why would that happen?
That is, if that girl was even Pauline to begin with, you're right.
Right.
But I think the family, as well as the authorities, they just really hoped for that case to be solved, you know, happy ending for everybody, and they hoped that that girl really was Pauline. She still didn't talk, but as you said, and as what doctor said, it could easily be due to trauma. But why? Why would someone take a child, travel over 200 miles with her, and then give her fresh clothes, only to leave her alone in the streets of Cherbourg? But then again, was it really that important? Most important thing, La Petite Pauline Picard was back with her family, superficially unharmed. Everything else would come, just give it time. And best, bring her home to the place she's so familiar with, because she will be back to her old self in no time.
Sure.
And in the meantime, the police would keep looking for clues to solve the mysterious case. So that's what they did. The Picards took Pauline back home with them, and when they arrived in Sorival, the townspeople gathered to welcome the family back home, and they all seemed to immediately recognize Pauline. The local newspaper reported about the return of the child, and François Picard was quoted, "She is, without a doubt, our daughter. She's just skinnier than before." Which, I mean, fair enough. This all must have been very exhausting for the two-year-old. And then it seemed as if Pauline really started to remember the occasional Breton word. She started playing with her siblings, as if nothing had ever happened. She even recognized other farm workers and called them by names, and I think also a cat.
Oh.
But then again, how much was suggested to her, right?
Well.
And then, 26th of May 1922, very shortly after Pauline had returned home with her parents, something happened. So on that morning, a local farmer rode his bike to the pasture to look after his cows, and all of a sudden he smelled something. It was the very unpleasant smell of decay. I'm sure a smell most of the people living in the countryside know very well. But this smelled very intense, so he thought that a rather big animal must have died somewhere in the bushes on his ground, and he had to remove it. So he crawled into the bushes, following the rotten smell, and he did not find the body of an animal, but he did find children's clothes. The clothes of a little girl, and they were neatly folded. No doubt his heart must have sunk at that sight, but it gets worse, so much worse, because when he looks around a bit more, he finds the body of a little child. The body could not be easily identified, the limbs were missing, and the head, lying next to the child, seemed to be too big for the body, and also the face was eaten off by wild animals, by foxes, I think.
Mm.
I mean, we know that children's heads are disproportionately bigger, but apparently this skull was the size of a grown-up.
Oh.
The body was found only 1 kilometer or 0.6 miles from the Picard farm. And I have an article from the New York Times from the day after the body was found, so that's the 27th of May 1922. Quote, Paris, May 26th. A baffling mystery is exciting the inhabitants of the small Brittany village of Gois-Aludu near Châtelet in the Brest district. Early in April, a little girl, Pauline Picard, disappeared from her parents' farm, not the slightest clue existing as to what had become of the child, and all searches proving fruitless. Finally, it was thought she must have been carried off by gypsies. I'm still quoting here.
Yes.
Also, none had been observed in the neighborhood at the time of her disappearance. Just when the parents had given up hope of finding her daughter, it was reported from Cherbourg that a small girl had been found wandering there, whose age and appearance corresponded to that of the missing Pauline. The Picards immediately hurried to Cherbourg and declared the child theirs. A curious fact, however, was that the child did not seem to recognize the parents and remained mute when addressed in Breton, although Pauline had been used to speak that language. Taken home, the child was recognized by neighbors, and the police officer who accompanied her from Cherbourg was satisfied that she really was Pauline Picard, although there was no indication as to how she had reached Cherbourg. The adventure thus appeared to have reached a happy ending, until yesterday a startling discovery was made, which makes the whole affair more mysterious than ever. A farmer crossing a field about a mile from Gois-Ludieu discovered the horribly mutilated body of a small girl, entirely naked and the head cut off. Close by, carefully folded, lay the cloth. The farmer hurried to the village and returned with gendarmes, followed by the inhabitants, among them the Picards, who recognized the cloth as those worn by Pauline the day she disappeared. The body could not be identified, the face having been partly devoured by foxes. Although it would seem almost incredible that the parents should make a mistake, the Picards are now uncertain whether the child they have been nursing for more than a month is really their own, and the police are faced with by a threefold task: to discover the murderer, identify the murdered child, and, if she is proved to be Pauline Picard, discover the identity of the little girl from Cherbourg. End quote.
Wow, yeah, so they had a lot to figure out. I'm not 100% clear. So was the girl's face eaten by wildlife or the head that was near the body of the girl?
The head that was near the body.
Okay.
So, and the day of the disappearance, the people had searched everything meticulously, as I said before, and they are absolutely certain that they would have found Pauline there, which leads to the conclusion that the body and the skull were placed there sometime after the search. Mm. The clothes were identified by the Picards as being the clothes Pauline had been wearing that day she went missing, which was a black and white checkered dress, navy blue jacket, and black tights.
Mm. So, yeah, we've seen this a few times before, haven't we, where things are put in a scene after a search. I have so many questions right now.
I think everybody had a ton of questions.
Yeah.
First of all, police and coroner were called, and it took them apparently 72 hours to get there, which is mind-blowing. The villagers had to guard the body so that no person or animal could destroy what little evidence was probably left, and honestly, hats off to them for that, because we know of so many cases, even modern-day cases, where the scene of crime or the scene of a found body was tampered with by people stomping through the crime scene.
Definitely.
And then the body was examined twice by two coroners. The first coroner stated that the child had been killed, at least that it's very likely that she had been killed, because he had found something that looked like a tiny rip or tiny cut in the tissue under the rib cage. I'm sure it must have been very difficult to even find something because of the state the body was in.
Mm.
And the coroner thought that this rip meant that the child had been stabbed.
Okay.
The second coroner disagreed. In his opinion, it was more likely that the child had died of natural causes. Pauline, if that was indeed Pauline, had wandered off the family farm, lost her way, she died of hypothermia, and then wild animals had dragged off her limbs and head. And as to why they hadn't found her during the search, well, probably they hadn't searched as thorough as they thought they had, or they had missed the bushes on the pasture.
And the wild animals folded her clothes. It's more bibbidi-bobbidi bullshit. I'm sure you've got more info on this.
So I have another article from the New York Times. I'm sorry I couldn't find the exact date.
Yeah, that's okay.
But it reads, quote, "Now a closer investigation of the circumstances under which the body was found and the medical examination have added still further to the detective's difficulties. So careful was the search made at the time of Pauline's disappearance that the body would have been discovered had it been lying where it was found. Everything now points to the theory that it was placed there together with the neatly folded cloth quite recently. The most startling discovery of all, however, is that the unrecognizable head found close to the child's body is not the skull of a small child, but of a grown man, thus introducing a second victim of an unknown murderer. One slight clue is reported as to the possible identity of the murderer. A few days ago, a middle-aged farmer, Yves Martin, visited the Picards and said he understood their daughter had been found. When told that she had, he asked, 'Are you sure it's Pauline?' And then he added, 'God forgive me, I'm guilty.'" Then, in wild laughter, he rushed from the farm, and the following day he was taken to a lunatic asylum, raving mad. It is thought possible that he killed Pauline, if the dead child was Pauline.
Again, there's just so many questions. It's like, how are they... Okay, so did the police believe Coroner 1 or 2? Please tell me it was Coroner 1. Because that's two bodies, or that's two people in one location, right?
It's parts of two different bodies in one location, which is not good.
Not good.
The police believed that it was a crime. The clothes alone, neatly folded nearby, pointed at it being a crime. I mean, I don't think a two-year-old who was out in the woods at night slowly dying of hypothermia would have taken off her clothes and folded them neatly. I mean, we know that people who suffer from hypothermia can feel the extreme sensation of burning up and often take off their clothes.
Yes.
So that's not the part that baffles me, but the girl would not have folded them up neatly if she thought she was burning up. I mean, no matter how strict she might have been raised, you know, to take care of her clothes.
And she's only two.
Yeah.
You know.
Plus the head. So as they say, apparently the skull of a grown man.
Did they ever figure out whose skull it was?
No.
Whose head it was?
We don't know that. No, we don't. If I say it's very mysterious, that's an understatement.
Yeah. It's... Wow. Okay, so what about the man they mentioned in that second article you just read? Yves Martin. What about Yves?
Yeah, so in most other sources I found that Yves Martin actually went to the Picasso before Pauline was found, and that he said what was mentioned in the article, you know, the God forgive me, I'm guilty. And yes, apparently he was committed into an asylum. For most villagers, he stayed the number one suspect, but the police didn't find anything that tied him to the case. And apparently ever since he had suffered from a head trauma in an accident, he developed some, well, they called it odd behavior, you know.
Yeah.
But the police thought that he was most likely not the murderer, even though he remains the prime suspect for many online sleuths to this day.
Wow. And there were no other suspects?
I mean, yeah, the parents were suspects as well. There was talk of François Picard being known for violent behavior. There were rumors of sexual abuse, but I think it was assumed that not her father was the abuser, but another male relative.
Mm.
Also, of course, the parents were suspicious because they had, quote-unquote, recognized their daughter in the girl from Cherbourg, because then they, you know, all the talk started. How did they not realize that this girl was not their child?
Right.
She didn't understand the language. She was skinnier. I mean, that can be explained away. Her teeth were different. So they thought maybe they did accept her as their daughter to cover up a murder, or maybe not even a murder, maybe a deadly accident.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
No.
I mean, first of all, if that would have been the case and the parents were responsible for the death of Pauline and wanted to cover it up, and then this opportunity presents itself with a girl from Cherbourg, they just laid the body of the child so close to their farm in a bush, I don't think, no.
No. And also, at that time and place, I would assume that had you actually intentionally or accidentally killed a child, it's not something that would have been hard to get away with. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, probably.
Because...
So on a farm, accidents can happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So it just doesn't make sense that they'd go to all the trouble. Yeah.
I honestly think that they really wanted the girl from Cherbourg to be Pauline. She looked similar enough that even neighbors said, that's Pauline Picard. And all those doubtful things could be explained away. I really don't think there was any malice behind it. They just desperately wanted their child back and they wanted to believe in a happy end.
I agree. This is such a strange situation to be in, to misidentify your own child, right? But there are several cases where we've seen this, and you always hear people saying, you know, how could anyone not immediately know? I feel that way. Like, how would you not immediately know? But then I think unless you've actually been in that situation yourself, you probably shouldn't judge. And if you are in the very small minority who have actually been in that situation, you wouldn't judge, you know? It's...
Yeah.
We don't...
I know. Yeah. I agree. I think it's human that we think, well, how couldn't they know? It's the first reaction of almost anybody. But
yeah.
I think it's just so possible, right? Also, does this remind you of another case, one that we haven't covered yet, but that is on my list, I know for sure, and I think it's also on yours, I'm not certain.
There's a few. There's the Wineville chicken coop murders.
Yeah, exactly, that's what I'm thinking of. Except in that case, the mother knew very well that this was not her son, and also the fake son knew very well that he wasn't, but they kind of convinced her, right?
Yeah.
I kept thinking about that one as well while researching this one.
Yeah. And also, one that I have on my list, the Bobby Dunbar case. That's another.
Ah, you're right. Yes, I completely forgot.
Yeah.
Also, interestingly, it was 1920 to 1922 when Anna Anderson started to claim to be the Grand Duchess Anastasia Nikolaevna of Russia.
Right. And she had the language problems too, right? She didn't speak Russian, which...
Yeah.
Listen, I'm just going to come out here and say that's a problem. And also, she didn't recognize the people that she should have.
Yeah, exactly. But they also explained it away.
We need to cover that. That's such a fascinating... There's a lot to do there. It's daunting to think about covering all of that. Okay, so what happened to this little girl from Cheborg then? I mean...
Well, after the body was found, the parents were sure that their daughter had died and that the little girl from Cherbourg was not theirs. She returned to Cherbourg. She was brought to an orphanage. I think it was run by the Franciscan Sisters of Notre Dame.
Ah. My great-aunt Sister Marie was a sister of Notre Dame. And Sister Louise.
And she was named Marie-Louise Pauline.
No, those were the names of my aunts. Sister Marie and Sister Louise. I'm not even joking.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, Sister Marie and Sister Louise were the names that they chose when they joined the convent. Yeah, that's funny.
And apparently it was found out that Marie-Louise was actually younger than Pauline Picard would have been.
Oh.
Poor Marie-Louise Pauline died only 2 years later when a measles outbreak rampaged Cherbourg. As to the body that was presumably Pauline Picard, she was put to rest in the local cemetery. As date of death, the family did put the day of her disappearance on the headstone.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, years later, her parents would be put to rest in the grave with their petite Pauline.
And they never found out what happened? There's no...
No. So now comes my theory, in my opinion.
What we think happened, yeah.
I don't think that she died of natural causes. The folded clothes, the male skull, I mean, sorry. Just doesn't make any sense. Do we think that wild animals tore off the limbs and head, carried it off into the woods, which absolutely possible, but then they brought a male skull there? I don't see that happening at all. I actually do think that the villagers and police had searched the area properly, so the body must have been placed there after the search was over. The murderer or murderers probably hoped that this would give them enough time before the body was found, even maybe until next spring.
Sure, yeah.
What do you think?
My first thought is honestly that no matter what happened, it seems so strange to me that they just sent this child back to an orphanage, right? Like, that's shocking to me.
I mean, yeah, but maybe they just didn't want to be reminded of their girl. I don't know.
I mean, I know they were going through a lot.
Everybody copes different.
It seems pretty cruel to, like, bring a child she didn't understand, bring a child into your home, treat her like one of your own, and then just send her off to die in an orphanage. It just seems very, I mean, different times. I'm not judging. I'm judging a little bit, but different times. Yeah, I don't think there's any way her death was accidental. The only thing that makes me wonder, that I wonder about, is did somebody in the village find out who had taken her? See if you can follow me with this thought. And so for example, somebody found the person who had taken Pauline with Pauline, and that Pauline had already died. And then maybe this person killed the person responsible and only left their head with her body so that they would understand who was responsible, maybe. Like, maybe someone killed Pauline and then someone else killed that person. Do you know what I mean? And then...
Yeah, but I think 1922 in a very rural area. Now imagine if you live there and you find somebody murdered a little girl. I mean, you would just call the other villagers and you...
Unless it was, like, your son.
Mm.
Like, you wouldn't want to bring any shame to the family. But then why would you put the head with the body? That doesn't make sense either. Yeah. I'm just trying to think, in what world would these two people Well, it would have had to been a murder that just was an opportunistic killer, right? No type. Somebody who just...
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you, though. I don't think there's any way it was accidental, especially because of the folded clothes.
It's so weird. The head is...
Yeah.
The head is the weirdest part. Did the person who murdered Pauline have, like... Was it kind of a serial killer situation? Or this person, did they have more body parts at home and then just confuse the heads when they wanted to get rid of the... Like, nothing makes sense.
It's very confusing. That part...
Because it was not just a skull, it was
a head.
I mean, the face was
chewed away,
eaten off. It was a head, so you would know that it's not the child's head.
Right. Unless, see, that fits the... Because I wonder, are they absolutely sure that the face was eaten by animals, or maybe it was done that way too? Again, if you had caught your son, maybe, with the body of this young girl, I don't know. It's just, I'm trying to figure out how.
I mean, I think they were really sure that it was fox bites that they could see on the head.
So there's just somebody in that small town dismembering people and leaving parts of them in the woods. I mean, that's horrific.
But I mean, it's such a small town. If people go missing.
Yeah. This is one that's going to keep me up at night now.
Unless it's people that are not from the town that go missing, like traveling salesmen.
Right.
You know, somebody that was not from
that
area.
But then would you expect to see two people again? Like, that reminds me more of, like, the Bleistift murder, where if we had only found her body missing its head and limbs, then I would think somebody traveling through, but with another head there.
No, I mean that the person who was murdered was a traveling salesman, for example, because...
Oh, yeah, that's very... Right.
If it was somebody from the community, he would be missed.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They would know who it was. Yeah, that makes sense. You're absolutely right. Huh. Well, that was a good one.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really looking forward to discussing this in the group because I want to hear what everybody's thinking about this.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. I think also some tree work just might have started next door. It suddenly sounds very chainsaw-y outside, so if you can hear a humming, that's what it is. That was amazing, Johanna. That's creepy. I'm going to be up thinking about that one for sure.
So you have something good.
Yes, the new season of Ted Lasso has started. I know I recommended it before, but I'm reminding you all again to please watch Ted Lasso. You'll enjoy it.
I still haven't watched it. It's on my list.
You're going to love it. It's so good. It's just really good. Although I will warn our listeners that in season 2, episode 1, it's not really a spoiler alert, but there's a situation with a dog. You don't see it. There's nothing. It's kind of a plot line. You don't see it. It's not. It's a bit, aw, but not. It's not awful. But just heads up. But yeah, really loving the new season of Ted Lasso. So how about you? What's good this week?
My something good, I was out with my sister on Saturday for, we went to a classical concert, Beethoven's 9th Symphony, in front of a Schloss nearby.
Amazing.
It was so lovely. It was so nice. My sister is a musician. She plays piano and guitar and drums and I don't know, so many things. And she loves music, but she usually loves electronic dance music and things, the like Goa and such things.
Sure.
I didn't know she was also interested in classical music, which, yes, of course, she's a musician. But I had tickets and I asked her if she would be interested to go with me. And she was so happy because she's never been. And it was really nice. And now I got us tickets for Carmen November.
Oh, that's going to be amazing. I know that I think the Boston Symphony Orchestra, Paul and I were just talking. I think they're getting ready to do Beethoven's 9th at the Hat Shell on the Charles River in Boston. But I need to look up the information and you're just reminding me I need to do that. But that sounds like an amazing night.
It was really good. Do you want to do all the infos for our listeners while I take a sip and...
I would be happy to.
...rest my scratchy voice?
Yeah, so thank you very much again for your support. We really appreciate it if you enjoy our podcast and you have iTunes, if you would leave us a review, only because that's often how other people find our show. And you'll find information on our webpage, which is freshhellpodcast.com. And if you go there, you'll find everything from how to get in touch with us, which of course our email is freshhellpodcast@gmail.com. And you'll find links to our merchandise if you want to buy a t-shirt or a mug or a sticker, or if you'd like to join our Patreon and support us in that way. You can find our information on our website or go to patreon.com and just type in Fresh Hell Podcast. We also have a Facebook group. If you search Fresh Hell Podcast Murder, then you'll find our Facebook group. It is a lovely, lovely group of people. And we made it through the first round of cuts, I guess, for the People's Choice Podcast Awards. We are in the final sort of nomination voting phase now. So if you received an email from the People's Choice Podcast Awards, then it's not spam. If you voted for us the first time, only people who receive an email can vote for us for the final awards. So check your email, see if you got an email from them to vote, because you are one of the chosen few who will decide who actually wins. We're nominated in Best Female Hosted and True Crime, I believe, are the two categories that you will find us in, and we would really appreciate that. Otherwise, say hi to your pets for us, right?
Yes, tell your pets we said hi. The cute ones, the not so cute ones, the loud ones, the quiet ones, the ones that cuddle a lot and the other ones that give you the cold shoulder. All of them are precious. Mm-hmm. Please treat them kindly.
Even the bitey ones.
Please treat them with respect. Yep. The bitey ones as well, the scratchy ones, the ones that wake you up in the middle of the night because they want to stargaze outside.
Opus lately, constantly waking us up in the night. Yeah.
Also, give your fellow human beings the benefit of the doubt.
Please.
At least once, please. Yeah. Be kind to them. Yeah. And that's it.
That's it. Until next week, if you're going through hell.
Keep going. Tschüss.
Bye.